Attention all groups. This is Admiral Akbar with your Armada advice. During a ship's activation, it may resolve as many orders as it can, but only one of each order type. Dials and tokens both resolve the order, just with different effects that can be combined. So if a ship has three tokens and a dial for the fourth type of order, it can perform all four actions during its turn at the appropriate times. Just remember that using the token or dial counts as resolving the order. So if you're concentrating fire, you have to spend both the dial and token on the same roll. You can't split them between different attack rolls, as that's resolving the order twice. Assume attack coordinates, and may the Force be with you.
At last we will deal with these rebel scum. You may fire when ready.
Welcome, Commanders, to the 16th episode of Fire When Ready, a Star Wars Armada podcast. I'm Jim. Well, we just had a tournament at Around the Table, where we had four players, damn you, Summer, and I decided to play Imperials to balance out the teams. It was a bit of a Smash Mouth list, and I am so out of practice playing Smash Mouth Imperials. I ended up taking a close third after a severe beating in the final round by my Imperial nemesis, Sean. As much as I love my Rebels, I'm thinking that with the new waves, I might play the Imperials a while to get a handle on their new toys. That way, I can better play against them when I defect back to the Rebellion. As I'm writing this, FFG has announced Wave 5 at Gen Con, so here's my hot takes on the new stuff. Imperials get the Arkitan's light cruiser on a small base. It has four defense tokens, two redirects, one evade, and is the first small ship to get contain. It's also a bit of a broadsider with three reds in the side arc, but oddly, the pick has two shields in front and rear on the cardboard, but three shields set on the ship dial. Fantasy Flight article screw up, or will the other variant have different shields? Yeah. It's probably a screw-up. It doesn't have brace, but with red dice in its preferred arc, you're going to want this to stay at range where that matters less anyway. Moff Gerard is interesting, giving super yaw at a price when you really need it. He's nice and cheap, too, since you may not need his ability, but it'll be clutch when you do. They also get new fighters, the Shuttle, the Phantom, the Defender, and the Decimator. I'm not an X-Wing player, and I'm kinda old school as I didn't read much Expanded Universe beyond the Zahn novels, plus I never actually played TIE Fighter, I only played the X-Wing video game. So the wacky TIE variants leave me a little cold. You should absolutely read the Claudia Gray novels in the new canon, though. Lost Stars and Bloodlines are great. Anyway, Phantoms can cloak, which looks like they can move even when engaged. The Shuttles have Relay, which lets them bounce a squadron order to fighters up to distance 3 from themselves, as well as a strategic keyword, which allows something to move. It's pretty covered up. Defenders are bombers, and the Decimator Ace has Counter, Rogue, a single brace, and 3 blue anti-ship dice. She can also spend her brace to re-roll any of her attack dice, and even recover it after discarding when she activates. She's 27 points, but she's going to hit like a truck against ships. Rebels get the flagship from the Rebels cartoon, Phoenix Home. It's another front-heavy ship, with 2 red and 2 black in the front, and 3 shields there, as opposed to 2 on the sides. It comes with 1 each of the standard defense tokens, and has a staggering 3 squadron and 4 engineering rating. It apparently comes with a new upgrade slot, Fleet Command, and a lot of squadron-based upgrade cards. The new Admiral, Commander Sato, is a pricey 32 points, but he allows you to replace 2 dice in your pool with an equal number of any other colored dice when attacking a ship that has one of your squadrons at distance 1. I see a lot of squadron-heavy lists in my future. Also, imagine an MC-80 dropping a couple of red dice for blacks at long range, giving it 3 with Defiance. An MC-30 torpedo launching all blacks at close range, or changing out a blue for a red to use TRCs for guaranteed damage output. It even seems like the timing for this will be in the modified dice step, so you'll be swapping after you've rolled, giving you immense flexibility depending on what the outcome of your initial roll was. I'm very excited for this ship. It feels like it's going to make the Rebel side what I want it to be, namely, heavily squadron-based like it is in the movies. For their new squadrons, we have the E-Wing, and see what I said about the TIEs and the EU above, bleh. The Z-95 Headhunter, the Shadow Hunter, and the Ghost. Z-95s have Swarm. E-Wings have the new Snipe ability, which I can't make out enough of, and they're bombers. The Shadow Hunter is a Rogue Grit bomber, and the standard VCX has Relay and Strategic, while Hera Syndulla's Ghost is 28 points with Grit, Rogue, a single brace, and gives Rogue to two squadrons that are near her when the squadron phase starts. Truly, she is the leader of Phoenix Squadron. I imagine her giving that to Tycho or A-Wings, or you can give it to Wedge or Luke for some real shenanigans. She'll fit right into a Riken Aces list as well, but with her points cost, I'm liking surrounding her with A-Wings both thematically and economically. I also can't help but think that since we're getting both the Ghost and Commander Sato, my prediction that the A-Wing squadron in the Corellia campaign will be Phoenix Squadron is feeling more and more correct. One final note for those locals who listen. I'm starting up the next Around the Table Armada League on the 25th, so if you can make it, we'd love to have you. At the end of the first league, the Rebels were on the run, and this picks up where we left off, with the Empire in hot pursuit attempting to crush these upstarts once and for all. Okay, on to business. First off, an addendum to my Firelanes talk last week. As second player in Firelanes, you're in one of the few situations where it might be a good idea not to table your opponent if you can. Sure, if it's the difference between a loss and a win, you should let rip, but otherwise your opponent has had 2 to 3 rounds minimum of sucking down VP tokens that you'll be wanting to counteract in a tournament setting. Letting them escape for a round or two to rack up tokens for yourself is a pretty solid plan, especially if their only remaining ship is a cheap one. Do the math for your situation for how much you'll get from tokens versus getting another ship's points, and do what's best for your tournament score. Just don't be a jerk about it. And speaking of jerks, now it's time for some villains. I was planning on doing all 4 villains this episode, but that reveal was so huge that the episode is going to be plenty long already, so I'm going to do 1 now and the rest next time. So first up, the Jumpmaster. I've talked a bit about the Jumpmaster when I talked about TIEs, due to its swarm ability working well with them, and giving them intel to boot. With 4 speed, Jumpmasters are able to keep up with TIEs, but they only sport 2 blue for anti-squadron fire, so they're not going to be contributing a lot to a dogfight. For only 12 points, though, a Jumpmaster is a great addition to an Imperial fighter wing. With it, you can ignore those pesky X-Wings or TIE Advanced and just rip the heart out of the linchpins of their squadron game, like Reimer, Jan Ors, Howl Runner, or a Jumpmaster of their own, or whatever trick they might have up their sleeve. Naturally, they also work well with non-TIEs. If you're running something like massed fire sprays, then having intel around to let them move past squadrons to bomb ships, or just kill whatever squadrons you actually want dead, will help your expensive rogues immensely for a pretty cheap price. Dengar is the real star of the Jumpmaster, of course. He bumps up to a respectable 3 blue dice in a dogfight, fires a black die at ships, adds a scatter and a brace, and gives everyone else at range 1-2 counter or +1 to their existing counter. This combos with Howl Runner's boost, so TIE Interceptors throw 4 dice as a counter with Dengar around. If you're going to run a TIE Swarm, Dengar's almost an auto-include. There's just 3 problems with him. 1. He's expensive at 20 points. That's 2.5 TIE Fighters. 2. He lacks Rogue, so you either move him after ships or have to use a squadron point activating him. And without that command, he's not going to be doing much shooting, which is a waste. And 3, he doesn't give himself counter, so you're going to need to keep him positioned well or use escort if you don't want him getting targeted right away. He'll still tend to stick around a while with 4 health plus brace and scatter, but a couple lucky shots could take away that big 20-point boost in a hurry. Either way you go, just remember that when you're using intel to move away from enemy squadrons, the intel ship has to move last. Moving the intel ship first means that your squadrons left behind and engaged are locked in. Conversely, if you're using intel where you're moving your squadrons to, the intel ship should move first to make everything at the target location heavy. So, you can see how this can become a real sticky wicket if you want to use intel at both locations and only have one intel squadron. Intel is a much trickier ability than it looks, so always give your squadron activations using it a moment's thought before you start moving things. After the break, we'll be back with a look at Fleet Ambush.
When Jim wants to play Armada, he heads down to Round the Table in Lynnwood, Washington. They have board games, a friendly and helpful staff, food, ice cream, and a rotating selection of beer and ciders, so you can loosen up and fly casual. Thursdays are X-Wing and Armada night, so come on down for a glass and a game and say hello. Find out more at www.rttgamepub.com.
We're back, and now we ambush your fleet. Fleet ambush is an objective I rarely see. While it seems pretty straightforward, the common wisdom is that the one the mission says is doing the ambush is actually the one getting jumped on. I find this objective to be more unpredictable more often than any other. One thing to remember as well, the ambush zone is measured from the edges of the setup area, not the play area. The setup area includes your deployment zone, but the other sides are already 5 in, so the ambush zone is 2 full ruler length, or 2 feet, in from the short edges, and just 1 in from the long deployment edges. When should you take it in your list? Fleet ambush is for lists where you're confident that your firepower is utterly overwhelming against a single ship, and can destroy it no matter what it is, within 2 turns, regardless of how they maneuver. The unfortunate part about fleet ambush is that you only know if it's a great idea to take it after you've seen your opponent's list, since so much depends on how their fleet compares to yours. That doesn't help you much when you're preparing for a tournament. And more than any other objective, fleet ambush puts a lot of the calculus in your opponent's hands. Other objectives can be obviously in your favor, and even against a similar list, being second player awards you enough advantages to give you the edge. But go up against the wrong fleet in fleet ambush, and those advantages suddenly go the other way. Since you're going to be getting your opponent up close and personal, it's kind of conventional wisdom that you should put this into a heavy black die list. But since they can activate before you, that advantage isn't as strong as you might think. Having ships that can fire at longer ranges will get you more attacks earlier. One reason to take it beyond your fleet makeup is that its presence in your list can be very intimidating. It doesn't get used terribly often, so it can have the fear of the unknown attached to it. If your list has a lot of black dice or bombers in it, it can also look like a very scary choice, where your opponent will be putting themselves that much closer to your biggest guns. With those ideas in mind, if there's a red or blue objective that you'd rather your opponent choose, sticking fleet ambush in the mix could make those two seem a bit safer. Conversely, if you don't have a good answer for squadrons in your list, you might want to skip this one, as facing off against a heavy bomber fleet you can't lock down or wipe out fast is going to hurt a lot at such close range. There really isn't a wrong list for fleet ambush, though. So how do you use it? The main thing to prepare for when thinking about fleet ambush is that you're creating a situation where combat is likely to start on the first turn, and all but guaranteed on the second. The second thing to be aware of is that you're not going to go first, so your opponent will get an opportunity to get their ships into a better position before you fire. The biggest advantage fleet ambush gives you is that it forces your opponent to split their fleet. So you have to make the most of that. They're going to be forced into a knife fight when they may not want to be. Make your priority to focus the weight of your firepower onto one ship at a time to whittle their fleet down quickly with multiple massive barrages and squadron attacks if you have them. Even if your opponent tries to run with their ambushed ships, just catching one of them in your trap will reduce their ability to harm you. However, be on guard for them to try to turn the tables on you. They have the advantage of first player, so they'll get to activate first and move out before you can, and they'll be in range to use it. They might even surprise you by plopping one of their big ships in the zone to start laying waste early. Even though you're the ambusher, be ready to deploy in a more defensive, grouped fashion to counteract their plans, with maybe one ship off to the side to cut off an escape route if they're deploying more parallel to the deployment zones. So, I've talked a bit about deployment and lists, but the other big component is obstacle placement. This can make or break a fleet ambush. As second player, you're going to get to place first, so a good idea is to place a large piece, such as the debris fields or station, in the half of the zone that's closer to their deployment zone. Try to place it such that even if your opponent places another large piece toward the side closer to you and more towards the middle, that you can put the final big piece in the other corner closer to them. This will obviously take some practice. Now, the reason for doing this is that they cannot deploy on obstacles inside the ambush zone, so you're closing off the areas that are further away from you to deploy in, as well as reducing the space that they can use, maybe preventing them from dropping a big ship in there. Smaller ships could want to try and run to loop around and join the rest of the fleet when it comes in from their deployment zone, and this is going to make that harder for them and easier for you to pick those ships off. A savvy opponent will try to put the remaining obstacles just outside your deployment zone to screen off some of your shots and force you to steer around them, so be ready for that when it's time to put down ships. Fleet ambush has a lot of moving parts and can be countered more easily than other objectives by your opponent, so shying away from it in tournament settings is totally understandable, especially since it doesn't award extra points. I'd still advise getting some practice in with it, and remember that it might just scare them into giving your MC-80 advanced gunnery as well. When should you choose it from your opponent? First of all, don't be scared. You can turn this one around easier than almost any other objective with the right deployment and play. If the others are bad choices for your list, getting ambushed is a pretty solid choice. A lot of the advice I gave before still basically holds, just reversed. Try to get obstacles in the far side of the zone to screen and reduce their avenues of attack. You activate first, so use that to your advantage to get into position for a second turn alpha strike that they can't escape. The main thing you want to look at is how your lists compare. Assuming that the other two objectives are objectively worse, ask yourself these questions. Can my fleet stand toe-to-toe with theirs in a close-range knife fight? How's our squadron and anti-squadron complement stack up? Will dividing my fleet make it too vulnerable? These will inform how you want to deploy for this objective. There's two basic ways you can go into the ambush. You can try to deploy facing away from your opponent and use lots of nav orders to do a loop so that your normally deployed ships will link up with them and enter into the fight at the same time. This is best done with smaller, faster, more maneuverable ships. Obviously, if your list is swarm-heavy, where your battle plan relies more on all of them hitting at once, then dividing it up is a bad idea, so the looping plan has a lot of merit. You might also want to do this if you have one big ship and some smaller ones to maximize your weight of firepower against a heavier opposing fleet. Just remember, lots of nav orders. The other way is to dive right into the teeth of the enemy and try to outpunch them. This works best with at least one ship that has long-range firepower that you can deploy normally, and closer-range ships that you can plant in wait inside the ambush. Again, putting obstacles down as cover for your ambushed ships is really going to help here. To illustrate this, I'm going to tell you about the game I played just this week. I went up against my buddy Josh at Around the Table. He brought a fleet with an ISD-2, Interdictor, and a VSD-2, loaded with the new Admiral Constantine and the rest of the speed-controlling upgrades the Empire received. He had no squadrons, but a lot of red-blue fire to throw. I ran my regionals list. Riken with MC-80, MC-30 Scout, Corvette B, Han, Dash, Nim, Kian, and a vanilla YT-2400. His other choices that he gave me were minefields and advanced gunnery, and as much as I'd like to give my MC-80 advanced gunnery, giving him two shots off that ISD-2 was something I wanted to avoid. So I threw down on fleet ambush and managed to get the two debris fields between his ships and the ambush zone. I put the 30 and the Corvette in the zone, since they are, as I said before, smaller ships, but they're close range and hit pretty hard. With the 80, the longer-ranged, larger ship, on an intercept course, angled slightly off, right up the center, the 30 and the Vet angled across in front of and circled behind his fleet as the 80 came in. He lined up the Interdictor and ISD to go up the middle and take advantage of Constantine, with the VSD set to loop in from the side, but sadly for him, it was not the side that I was actually heading towards. I was initially planning to drop my 80 into the ambush zone, but he put that Interdictor Speed Zero token into it, and only the two small-based ships would fit in at the edges and avoid it. My squadrons deployed off my ambushed ships to get in close right away. We went in, and I immediately started taking a lot of fire, but I got a great APT crit against the ISD's front arc with the 30, which kept it from redirecting away from a zone with no shields. Coupled with my XI-7s, that meant that the ISD had nearly full shields everywhere else, but nothing in the front on turn 2. A lucky roll against my 30 by the ISD kept it alive for a third round, even as he got a lot of accuracies that knocked the hell out of it in the Vet. The third round saw both the Vet and 30 go up in smoke, but Riken kept them running as the 80 started opening up. His ships had been taking a real pounding from my bombers working them over unopposed, and it now paid off as the 30 dropped the ISD with a side-rear double-arc volley, and the 80 let rip into the front of the approaching VSD and stripped its shields. Due to his speed shenanigans, the 30 was stuck in front of the 80, so the 80 took some ramming damage, and at the end of the round, I lost the smaller ships, but the squadron started taking a heavy toll on the Interdictor. By the end of the fourth round, the Interdictor was destroyed and the VSD followed in the fifth. Recapping the decisions that I made selecting this, I saw that I had some burly bombers in my list that he wasn't going to be able to reliably counter. I knew that Riken would keep my ships running long enough to put the hurt on his heavier ships before dropping. My 30 was kitted out to hit and run at close range, and while I was unprepared for the speed control shenanigans, it certainly did the hit part. With that much endurance and return fire, I was confident I'd come out on top in a slugfest, so I chose fleet ambush, and it was the right call. In a tournament, it would have been a 9-2 win under the new rules. Hopefully, I've given you some good ideas about playing fleet ambush from both sides. It's a very fluid objective that has so many moving parts and choices that there isn't a right answer for every or even most situations. The guidelines and basic plans I've talked about should hopefully put you in a good place to start from, though. As always, experience and practice are the two best things you can do. That wraps it up for this episode. Next time, it's the rest of the villains, and we'll start in on the navigation objectives with minefields. Until then, you worry about those fighters, and I'll worry about the tower. Course is set. On your order, Admiral.
It's a wrap!
Fire When Ready, a Star Wars Armada podcast, can be found at www.firewhenreadypodcast.com. Talk to me online on Twitter as @ArmadaJim or by email at jim@firewhenreadypodcast.com. All celebrity voices impersonated, all rights to the spoken content of this podcast are reserved.